And it is 22 minutes past the hour, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist and a vigneron. Yes, he has a winery. Don, you can understand why Don, how he uses his biochemistry background. It's part and parcel of the wine business. But he's also a member of the Board of Creation Moments. And Don talks to us weekly about things, matters of creation and faith and science and evolution and such. And Don, you've got quite a story today. A new bird species. We should have a trumpet, a fanfare for this. A new bird species has evolved as scientists watched it happen, it says, on Galapagos, down where where Charles Darwin used to hang out. Tell us the story about this bird species, this new bird species.
Well, you know, don't get too excited about this, because it's another finch. It has always been a finch. No. It will always be a finch.
No.
But this finch happens to be a little bit bigger than the other finches on this particular island, small island in the Galapagos called Daphne. So here's what happened. Peter and Rosemary Grant, they are biologists at Princeton University, have been going to the Galapagos apparently for some time, and on one of their visits they noticed this larger finch, and it was kind of by itself. They didn't see it fly in from the other islands, but it is present on the other islands, and they watched the finch mate. And they said, oh, well, this is interesting, because usually when you have what's called a hybridization, sometimes you don't get fertile offspring. The offspring aren't necessarily fertile.
Like but horses and mules only, and things, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the problem, I mean, so they watched it mate, they watched it, have like eggs and have babies, and then on subsequent trips, I guess they watched those birds mate. I don't know how they necessarily isolated these particular birds, or the island has to be pretty small that the finch population must be pretty small. But anyway.
I'm looking at a picture of one of these birds, and it's got tags on its legs, so maybe that's how they could tell. I don't know.
Oh, maybe so. Yeah. You're right. They probably caught. I do see that, and they probably caught them and tagged them, so they knew who was who, and one was Charlie and one was Henry, I'm sure. And of course, there was other names that they gave some of these birds, but I don't know if they gave them names, but they at least gave them numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, they gave them the name. Anyway, they call them Big Bird. They do now. So
yeah,
but he's not big.
Yeah, and
he's
that's because Papa was a big bird, was a big finch from one of the other Galapagos islands.
Yeah,
to come to this little Galapagos islands. Well, they almost lost all the birds during a drought, and the Galapagos, you know, goes through rainy seasons, years where it's raining a lot, and years that it's a drought, and they almost lost all of them. To the drought, but they had one pair that remained, fortunately for them, and that pair continued to mate, and now I think there's like eight of these birds or so, or maybe even more, offspring from this original mating that happened, several years ago, back, I guess, in 2012 or something. Mm-hmm. But what do the biologists interpret this to be? Well, here's evolution in the making, is the interpretation.
Hmm.
Now, how do you explain this as evolution?
Well, this sounds to me like two finches got together and produced finches.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
But their DNA was slightly different. When you start getting speciation, the original DNA pool, let's talk about the kind, the finch kind. Mm-hmm. Okay, so long time ago, there was a kind called finch. Mm-hmm. And the finch, or even the bird kind for that matter, and as the the populations got isolated from one another, they began to lose some DNA information, not gain it. Here's the point. As you go through speciation, you lose information, and you don't gain information. And so here was Papa Finch, Big Papa Finch, who had perhaps lost some information, or the little finches lost some information. And when the two finches got together, of course, the DNA pool now was a little bit larger, because you brought back two different, I didn't even want to say kinds, but two different species. So
variations, slight variations within the kind had occurred.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the same thing with respect to, you know, dog breeding, for example. The reason why, I mean, you select out the characteristic in the dog that you want. Mm-hmm. Let's say you want a short-haired dog. Well, all the offspring from mama and papa that have a little bit shorter hair, then you select those out. And, you know, eventually you get a short-haired dog. Or the opposite, if you want a long-haired dog, or if you want a small dog or a big dog. And so, you know, we have been doing this kind of selective breeding, if you will, for a long, long time. It just so happens that the Galapagos Islands, because they're so isolated, it does this selective breeding for you. And here was an example of maybe because the finch was a little bit larger, it could fly a greater distance and could hop the islands, whereas these smaller finches, you know, couldn't. And so it got over to this other island. Now, that, granted, they didn't see this bird fly in.
Yeah, how do they know it came from another island?
What's that?
How do they know it came from a different island if they didn't see it fly in?
Oh, because it's similar to finches on other islands.
Okay, sounds like it's a good guess then.
Yeah, so it's not like this was a unique finch mm-hmm. that automatically just popped up in the Galapagos Islands. It was already present in the Galapagos Islands, mm-hmm. and so there's calling the cross between the smaller finch and the larger finch a new species. Mm-hmm. And this happens all the time in biology. I mean, a finch is a finch. Yes, you've got, so do you, I mean, we call, we have different, you know, different names for different breeds of dogs, but we call them different breeds. I mean, you got the Chihuahua, you got the mm-hmm. Great Dane and everything in between. But, you know, they're breeds because we're actively breeding those dogs to get these particular characteristics. Here, this just happened by, in quote, chance. And so this is a great discovery in producing a new species. They, you know, they want to give it a special name, so they call it a different species, when in fact it's just a melding of some DNA that had been there for eons that had been lost like I said, the larger finch or the smaller finch, and when they got back together, their gene pool actually probably was richer than either one, you know, alone. And if you take all the dogs and you interbreed them, then you will probably get a closer representation as to what the original dog kind, you know, as well as wolves, mm-hmm. you know, and foxes, what the original dog kind probably looked like from a DNA point of view. And when, for example, the human genome was put together, that's exactly what they did. They analyzed DNA from a whole bunch of people and then kind of summarized and said, well, this piece is kind of missing over here and it's filled out over here, so we're just going to take the filled out part and put it all together. And so you've got a more complete picture of what the original human species.
So the so-called new species actually could be an old species that's emerged again because of the mating of these two slightly different finches, or at least exactly. closer to the original finch. Now, I have a couple questions about DNA. First of all, if you're listening and you'd like to read this same story, there's now a link in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. If you're listening elsewhere, you can go there, or just go to sciencealert.com and you can search for finches there and you'll see the story. DNA, now you mentioned that we the DNA loses information, it doesn't gain information. Isn't that true of all of us? Aren't there mutations from generation to generation that are essentially a loss of original DNA?
Well, there certainly is, and we can kind of guess how old we are. I mean, old is the human species, if you will. We are, based on how many mutations there is in the gene pool, the DNA gene pool of the humans. Mm-hmm. And we actually talked about this some years ago, but we talked about that. And you can figure out that, well, if you look at the number of DNA, you know, on average, the number of DNA mutations, and if you look at the rate of mutation for that particular species or kind, in this case, if we're talking about humans, then you can get a guess as to how long that particular species or human has been around. And if you do this for a number of different animals as well as man, you find out that, it looks like everything is, less than 6,000 years old. Certainly less
from the original,
than 10,000 years
because
old.
There are markers that let science ascertain when the original DNA was present. And because they know the rate of change of DNA, they can go work backwards and discover that hypothesis, at least, as to the date of origination of a species. And it coincides, doesn't it? They all kind of come together about the same time.
Yes, it appears so, because different species have different mutation rates, and so if you can get a handle on the mutation. Now, this isn't an exact science, because you don't know exactly what the mutation rate is and what the conditions on Earth were in the past, even though they folks like to think that they do. But you can at least get a ballpark, estimate of this. And when you do studies like that, you come up with an interesting find that supports creation, the creation model as described in Genesis chapter, in the early books of early chapters of Genesis. We come up with a young population. We come up with a young Earth, if you will, all based on the history that's recorded in Genesis, as opposed to the history that we kind of make up, for ourselves, and say that, oh, look at this rock. It looks like, it's millions and millions. It's, a couple of hundred millions years old. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I found a bone in this rock, or I found a fossil in this rock. So therefore, the fossil in the rock has to be, 250 million years old. And but yet that 250 million year old fossil or bone, for example, has DNA in it and protein still left in it. And then you kind of scratch your head. How could it survive that long? And the answer is, of course, it didn't. The flood was only like 4,600 years ago, when that animal actually got buried by the mud from the mudslides and stuff that were happening at the time of the flood.
Well, here's another question then. This article says that evolution happened while scientists were watching. Glorioski. I thought evolution was supposed to take eons.
Oh, eons. But now, remember, this isn't going from a finch to a partridge, for example, or to some other type of bird. This is going to from two finches to a new, what we're calling, species of finch.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do they have some way to measure DNA to know the percentage of change from one animal to the next? And so they can say, aha, a new species, because it's 80% different or 10% different. How do they determine when it's a new species?
Well, that's a good question. And, of course, you've got the morphological changes that the interspecies new finch is probably somewhere between the large big bird finch and the smaller ones that were not native, but common on that particular island. as well as there is probably some, you know, DNA variation. At least that's what they kind of hint at in the article. The article's not a scientific article by any means, so they didn't give any data whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I can't answer that question. That is a good question as to whether or not is there some degree of change in the DNA that you finally say, aha, that's a new species.
Yeah, is there like a rule or a law of DNA there? Because I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, you probably know this, that the difference between mice and men is about 10% of the DNA. You know, that we would have 90% in common because we're both mammals. So
well,
it must be a very small percentage.
And you got to take those numbers with a kind of like a grain of salt or grain of DNA here, because the when you're doing the comparison, a lot of those studies were only done with the coding regions of the DNA. So if you take the coding regions of the DNA and compare them between, let's say, a pig and man, then you find that, gee, there's not that much difference between a pig and a man. However, most of your DNA, especially in us, in humans, is non-coding. And it has to do with control. And it has to do with how the DNA is folded and how the DNA is protected and when a gene is turned on and when it's not turned on. And all the control mechanisms, if you don't include that in your DNA comparison analysis, then you know, you're not doing a fair analysis. And when those studies have been done comparing all of the DNA, the percentages are much, much lower than what's typically stated.
Uh-huh. So this again is a situation where scientists have set their own set of rules, and regardless of what the empirical evidence is, they're going to bend it to fit their rules.
Well, yes, and here we have a story that is trying to be, that is sensationalized, and the evolutionists will use this story and use this piece of evidence to show, hey, you see, evolution works.
Uh-huh. Okay. Don, you've enlightened us again.
There's a circular argument phrase that, maybe it's called circular argument, but or circular tautology.
Circular logic, yeah.
I mean, in philosophy, there's an argument based on the evidence that it suggests that exists, and there's a straw man it's a kind of a normal. It's not Occam's razor, but it's something that is fairly almost a cliched phrase in the discussion of presenting evidence.
Yeah.
And this sounds like it.
Well, this is a jump to conclusions that you've determined beforehand you were going to jump to if ever you found this particular set of circumstances. So, yeah. Dr. Don Clark, again, member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website, creationmoments.com. And the whole purpose of Creation Moments, the ministry, is to present scientific evidence that demonstrates, that proves, that supports the biblical creation story. And you'd be amazed at how much pure science there is that speaks to that in exactly that way. So I recommend a visit to them, creationmoments.com. Don, thanks so much for joining us again today. And good luck with your bottling tomorrow. 5,000 bottles.
It's going to be might be a long day. We'll see.
You get volunteers in there, right, to help you out there?
We do have volunteers, so that'll help a bit.
Okay.
And we'll hopefully get it all done by 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But we'll see.
Well, all right.
All right.
Good luck and have fun with it. And
maybe right, next
thank
time.
You.
Don, we'll see you next week. Bye bye.
So long.
See you, Don.